Welcome back to another edition of the Change My Mind podcast.
I won't change my mind because I don't have to, because I'm an American.
Yes, you are. And I'm Wesley Sykes. And through the other side of the ether is the sun to my moon. It's Mr. Nicholas J. Eskfryer, solar eclipse for hire.
I'm the sun. Nope. Yeah, I'm the sun and you're the moon. Okay.
Yeah. I feel like that's about right. Yeah.
I could see you making the case that way. I could see you making the case the other way. I think that's what makes this show so special.
Ah, absolutely. What that really reminded me of as I was saying it was Khaleesi to Khal Drogo in Game of Thrones, my sun and stars.
Oh, wow. That's
a little bit of a throwback. Huh? I haven't talked about that show in a while.
It's been a long time, but we got the new season coming. Is it June or July?
It's coming up right around the corner. And I heard that they're even trying to do like a Sir Duncan the Tall and Egg story. I hear that might get greenlit. I don't know, how accurate that was, whatever I was reading on Twitter, but
who's
the rumors out there?
Can you give me an abbreviated explanation of that?
No, I can't. I can't go much deeper than that. I know it was kind of like he was a fabled man during the show, and people talked about him, and like as like, oh, yeah. He was a great warrior, and then now they're going to go back and kind of like flesh out his story.
Oh, okay, that's cool. I think I'd be interested in that. I do think when you're talking about like HBO, that's kind of a like you're supposed to be like a, like it's a big deal, right? Like you're not like Netflix or Amazon You can go epic, but you can also go a little bit smaller scale. So that's interesting if they decide to end up going that route, as much as Game of Thrones is always epic.
Yeah, trying to draw blood from a stone, you know?
Apparently. Yeah, that's...
But we're not talking about Game of Thrones this week. This week, we're talking about more X-Men. It's like X-Men month, the whole month of April here.
Yeah, I'm looking for it.
Sorry, got to get the guitar riff in there.
Yeah, of course, it's the best. It is one of the best like theme songs, maybe the best theme song of a show of all time.
Arguably, I believe another program did a March Madness bracket of the best theme songs.
Really? Who?
I believe so. March Madness. I could have sworn that was. I thought had a top 10.
Yeah, because I think they did a villain. Their things villain related. Their March Madness.
Well, yeah, right now, but I'm saying in the past, at some point in time.
Oh, okay. I'm not.
We're moving forward. Because this week we're going to be ranking the best live action X-Men character portrayals. Building upon our draft with your other co-host, Doc Joe Gilmore, Backcracker. Mm. So I still think I drafted the best team. I didn't need to put a vote out there to confirm that, so I'm just going to crown myself the winner.
Oh, wow.
But we are going to be doing rankings of the X-Men character portrayals, live-action version. But before that, Nick, we were talking about the solar eclipse a little bit here, you being the sun to my moon. Do you believe that staring into an eclipse can do damage to your vision?
I guess so, yeah. I mean, okay... We didn't get the full thing. Like,
right. I think we had like 92% or something like that.
We had it up there. And I might've had it more than you. Cause we like in New Hampshire, there was like a location that had like a peak. At least it was like a highlighted spot, but it was like just when it got to like its full point for us, it was like the bottom left, like a little bit was still opened up so that was it. Everything else was fully covered. When I tried to look at it, like just a passing glance at the sun, because I'm like worried that, yeah, I would think it is going to cause damage. As much as everything around was a little bit darker, I would try and catch like a passing glance just to be like, oh, you know, like we do this looking at the sun anyways. Like you just occasionally look at it. So I did a quick look, and like it was like there was no moon in the way. It was the same to me. It felt the same as any other time, like any other day. So I would say yes, because it just, I think you just still see enough of the sunlight.
But have you stared into the sun when it's not an eclipse? So have you sun gazed?
I mean, I don't think I've ever done it too long, because my eyes start to close and it hurts.
Yeah, naturally, right? But that's what I wonder. Like, how long would it take for you to look at? I feel like it's almost instantaneous with the eclipse. Like, maybe I'm misremembering my information on this here. But
no, that's fair, because I feel like that's. Like it's like don't because the rhetoric around
it's a
around
fleeting
it,
thing anyway. You know, it happens so quickly as it is.
Yes. I feel like the rhetoric around it is like, don't stare into it because you're going to damage your eyes. Not don't stare into it because it's basically the same as looking into the sun when it's not covered by the moon anyways. Which I get people might be like, that doesn't make any sense. I when in looking at it, I see how that would make sense. So it's,
yeah,
I don't know.
Like I'm not chancing it. You know, like this isn't something I'm going to literally die on the hill for. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no.
I'm not going blind or you know, I worry that I would get blind if I was like, oh, you know, I can do this is all just hogwash, old wives' tales. But it doesn't really make sense to me how a sun that's 93 million miles away can burn your retinas essentially in like a 1 minute, I don't know, 30 second, 15 second span, whatever it is. It just boggles my mind.
It's
again, it's, not willing to try it out, but I just can't really wrap my head around it.
I'm curious if there's like a explanation out there of like, is an eclipse looking at the sun during eclipse more dangerous than just normally looking at the sun? Cause you would think that the latter of the options that I gave would be more dangerous. And I clearly like both aren't, but I don't know. And that's where like it kind of, it's, they make it sound like it's the former, that when you look into an eclipse, like if you do it for too long, you're going to go blind. So I don't know, but I would actually read that. Like which is it?
I want to read some good science on this, you know, not the propaganda that gets pushed out. I want the real deal science on this. The people who, conduct flat earth experiments do this experiment for me, you know.
I think they stopped doing that a long time ago, actually.
What,
the flat earth experiments?
No, they go on long and strong.
Oh, do they?
Sure. Just
and
like
not, and no one's fallen off yet.
Yeah, no, we're still there. It wouldn't be the theory isn't just it's like a square earth, it's like a disc, like a sphere that would come with a wall.
So
while around Antarctica, like that's what some people.
So it's not so. Okay. So it's
telling you what the argument is. I'm not saying that I believe it.
Okay. All right. That's where I didn't know. Okay. Got it.
But I can be compelled either way. You know, I don't really know that the Earth is spinning. I don't really know that it's a sphere. We're just taking, you know, people's words for it.
Okay.
So with a compelling enough argument, I could probably be swayed the other way.
Got it.
Like, give me like a well edited 30 minute YouTube video on it, and I was like, oh, okay, I'm a flat earther.
Okay. Oh, you. Oh, that just reminded me of something else for a Discharge Depot for later. Sorry, okay. I'm just jotting it down, but yeah, sure. I got nothing to add to that. Like, I think it's no, it would take
watch a good flat earth movie, document. That's all I gotta say. And tell me that the evidence isn't compelling.
I've seen some simulation, stuff. I think it was on Hulu. Among the conspiracy theories that are out there, I was like listening to that and I was like, the stuff that I'm hearing just sounds like it's people are trying too hard.
I think we watched that same things. Document. I think I remember that we talked about it on the podcast at some point there. I forget what the documentary was, but I think we both watched it.
Yes. Yeah. Separate times. Cause it was definitely something that Lauren introduced me to and it had been around for a long, long time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Those kind of things. I'm just like, also my other problem is like, who cares? Like what's it doing to us?
What can
like,
you do about it?
I mean, it's in many ways. Yes, exactly.
What's going to change in your life, right? Yeah, nothing.
But, yeah, but also, it's just like who like.
Actually, that also comes into my Discharge Depot.
Look at that.
Interestingly enough, but you know, let's get into the comic book minute. Enough conspiracy theory talk. I don't want to break your brain anymore.
Yeah. a superb choice.
This is actually why I need to read picture books. So, yes, the comic book minute. We got from Marvel this week some X-Men stuff. We got the second issue of the X-Men animated series, 97 companion story that's going on right now. It's actually a prequel to X-Men 97. We got Wolverine issue 47. So, and there's plenty more X-Men stuff coming out this week from Marvel. But those are the two big noteworthy ones for me. From AWA Studios, a company that we talk about a lot on TLDR, Little Black Book issue 2. From Boom, we got Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, The Return issue 3. This is the penultimate issue of this series. And this is written by Amy Jo Johnson, the Pink Ranger. And then also we got Uncanny Valley, which is the first issue of that. That's an interesting story where the main character, he finds out that he's part of his like family background. He is part cartoon. So like he's like half, I don't know, English and then half cartoon. Like that's not exactly what it is, but that's what we're going for here.
Okay. All right. I'm picking up what you're putting down.
Had a lot of fun with that first issue. And then on TLDR this week, we'll be talking about all that stuff and The Sacrificers, which is an Image series that I want to talk about. And then Joe is going to be doing some work for the people. He has read Fantastic Four Life Story. He read it when it was an ongoing series at Marvel. And we heard that it's going to be supposedly going to be an important series to read for the upcoming Fantastic Four movie, whenever that does come out. I forget the release date, if we even have one.
Next summer, maybe?
So there you go. He's rereading Fantastic Four Life Story, and he's going to talk about that on the series in light of that development.
Pretty interesting stuff. Are we going to get a Shala Ball run at all?
Shala Ball?
I believe that's what the female Silver Surfer is that's going to be in that movie.
Oh, I see. This is the thing. I don't know. I know very little when it comes to the Fantastic Four because I just find them so boring. You know what? I have no problem. Sue Storm, neutral to me. Johnny Storm, somewhat interesting.
It's Clobbering time?
Somewhat interesting. I mean, in fairness, they've had their own stuff, though, some of them, and I just never was like, oh, yeah, I want to read it. But Mr. Fantastic is where I'm just like, oh, just get out of my face. I've told you this before.
Yeah.
But yeah, with her, there's been stuff with her. I don't know exactly what they've done with her in the past. I would think, too, they must have some stuff in the works over at Marvel to like amplify or raise the awareness for some people who are at least are younger readers for who that character is. But yeah, I don't know.
Just give me Norm Rad, you know, at this point, that's where I'm at. Just give me Norm Rad. That's all I want.
I'm sure we'll get him at some point.
Yeah.
I think I saw that there was a world where there's like a Marvel universe or branch of the universe where they coexist together. There may be other ones where they also exist, but I've seen like her have a different look before, so I'm not sure. But yeah, I'm sure we'll get both.
I'm sure you're right. You are right here. But enough of the Fantastic Four. We're gonna get to the other great Marvel family, the X-Men. There we go. And we're gonna be doing a character rankings courtesy of Tearmaker, of friends at Tearmaker. This is what we got pulled up here. And let me see if I can get this on my screen too. All right. So we got the categories here. Unrivaled. This is the best of the best. A++ type of work here. Then we got A, your typical gradings, your A's, your B's, your C's, your D's, no E's. And we got a good F in there.
Yes.
And we got a lot of characters to choose from. We may not get to them all.
Well, it may not be worth it.
Yeah,
that's what I was going to say. For most of you, anybody who, you don't need to have read the comics or whatever, to obviously know all these characters, but there are plenty where it's like, they didn't have
you're glitching on me here. Thank you, StreamYard.
We don't need to get into those characters.
Okay, perfect. All right. So do you want to do your, you're all set. Do you want to get into your first nomination?
Yeah, sorry about that. First nomination. Let's start. I think that the Unrivaled and A will be, there'll be some, I'm sure there'll be some tough ones there, but I do think by and large Unrivaled and the F category are going to be pretty easy. Mm-hmm. Let's go though. No, I don't want to go there yet. You know what? Let's go with the character everybody expected me to start out with, the Blob. Yes. So obviously he is in Wolverine Origins, but a movie that I have defended in the past, but as I've rewatched it, I've seen and gotten older and smarter, I've realized, no, okay, yeah, there are quite a few flaws with this movie. I don't want to make you hover too long, Wes. I'm going to put that in the C category. I actually think he did a good job. I think, though, just we get so little of the character in the movie that I don't want to go. I feel very comfortable putting him at a C, but I could be talked into a B here for the character. But anything below C, I feel like he doesn't deserve that strong of a take.
Well, I won't be talking you into a B because I don't think I've seen this movie. I don't think I've seen all of the Wolverine spinoffs, however many of them that there are. But this, he does look cool. He's kind of got like a Butterbean aspect to him in this photo. So I kind of respect that. You know, that's kind of like life imitating art a little bit.
I didn't realize you've never seen the entirety of Wolverine Origins.
Probably not. No. Is that with Liev Schreiber?
Yeah.
Not enough to where it sticks out.
Okay. I mean, well, that's fair. That doesn't stick out, but that would be surprising. We did a whole episode on me like making a defense of it. I think I did, right? Or is that Van Helsing? No, no. We did it with Van Helsing. Because that's gotten terrible ratings, but then I was gonna do it with Wolverine Origins, and then I rewatched it and was like, I've thought better of this.
There
that's
we go. There okay. we go.
Anyways, enough of that. Let's get back to the freaking grading. What do you got?
Yeah, and just a quick note, because we didn't mention this off the top of the segment here. Do you want to do two stamps and two vetoes?
Yeah, there's so many. Yeah, yeah. Let's do two and two. Yep, good call.
Okay, awesome. Okay, so I'm gonna put a nomination up for the A category. And I'm going to go with Josh Brolin's Cable.
Nice.
Yeah. Not really, you know, we didn't get the longevity with some of the other characters here, although he may show up in Deadpool and Wolverine and maybe later on. But just a really great live action adaptation of a really cool character. I thought it was very well done. You know, when you think about how someone translates from the comic books onto the live screen, I think he's maybe in that conversation for that Robert Downey Jr. Iron Man, you know, Chris Evans, Captain America, like he really just looks the part here. And obviously with some CGI help too, that really, really goes over the top.
Yeah. He's good. I think A is perfect for him where it's like, he's because unrivaled for us is like generational, like talents in these roles or performances, I should say. And I don't think he's quite there, but I don't think he's like, I don't think over time, I couldn't have my mind changed about that.
Absolutely. All right, good. We're in a good spot there. Two locks right there, the Blob and Cable.
Yeah. I'm going to join you in the A category because I do have someone similar here. We're going to put Nightcrawler, at the X2 Nightcrawler in the A category.
All right, let me see if I can find him. I see Days of Future.
There he is.
Oh, this is him, huh?
Yep, there you go. Yeah, you got him. So he, I don't know, was he in Days of Future Past? Anyways, the biggest crime against him in X2, and then we never see him again.
Yeah, you're breaking up a little X-Men bit movies. There.
So. I think he does an outstanding job. Obviously, he's. Let me turn my camera off and see if that helps us at all. Actually, you know, Wes, I'm going to close that tier maker on.
Okay. Yeah. I think what stands out the most about it is obviously that opening scene in the White House of X2, right? That's the big, the huge takeaway and the huge like landmark scene. Obviously, he's got the cool BAMF powers. BAMF. That's a fun word to say. I don't think it's a real word. It could be an acronym.
Acronyms. Badass motherfucker. That's what it stands for. But in this case, it doesn't do that. By the way, am I no longer lagging? Are we good now?
You sound good. You sound good at the moment.
Okay, that's all that matters. So it was the tier maker. I apologize. So yeah. The biggest crime is that he's not in any of the other X-Men stuff. We just get him here. Obviously, he comes back in the reboot of all the X-Men stories, but just it's not obviously we're dealing with a different actor. But for me, it's like, yes, that opening scene stands out for the character, but then also how he's written and how he's portrayed as it goes along. Like they very much, both from an acting standpoint and a writing standpoint, got the character right in X2. And it's one of the reasons why it's the best movie of the first of the original X-Men movies.
Yeah, and we'll have a good mini conversation, mini rankings here in a little bit about the best blue character. We got a couple of them here, so
I don't think there's a debate, but yeah, it's interesting.
All right, so yeah, I'm good with Nightcrawler in the A category here. Let me see. I am gonna go with a B nomination and go with Olivia Munn's Psylocke.
Ooh, okay.
I think she was great in this. She looked the part. You know, if you followed any of her social media leading up to and when the movie came out, which was Apocalypse, if I'm not mistaken, she trained really hard. She put in the man hours, the elbow grease, if you will, but didn't get a long run. You know, I could be talked down to a C. B is, you know, probably on the low end of the B category, but I really like the look of her in this.
Yeah, I think I think B is perfect for her. I don't think there's enough of her whereas with Nightcrawler we get a ton of him in X2. We do get a significant amount of her in Age of Apocalypse, but at the same time she's far from one of the major plot points like Nightcrawler is. So
but she's a good muscle. But
yeah, she does a good job. Yes, 100%. But at the same time, she's not like this like otherworldly performance where maybe that could bump her up to an A. So yeah, I think B's perfect. Good call.
All right. I like it.
All right. So let's make an addition to the F category. And you're going to go all the way down to the bottom for this one, Wes. We're going to go with someone who I was extremely excited for. And that's Gambit. Obviously,
great casting.
I mean, from a look standpoint, but yeah, from a performance standpoint, no. I don't know if it was his call or like lack of ability. And look, doing a Cajun accent, like just doing accents in general, isn't easy, but right, he doesn't do a Cajun accent, and that is a pretty significant part of the character. He does do like a somewhat of a Southern accent, I think, but just by and large, like he wasn't. Taylor Kitsch just didn't get it done. I think also from a writing standpoint, he wasn't well done. So I think that part isn't his fault. But yeah, all around, like this is one of the characters, like when you talk to a lot of, like I used to think as a kid that I was like, oh, I like Gambit's my favorite character. Everybody else's is Wolverine from like the X-Men animated series. Mm-hmm. I thought I was alone in that. And then I grew up and talked and got to know more people who watched the show. And it's like, no, Gambit's probably like most dudes' favorite character.
Yeah.
You can't get it as wrong as you did.
Yeah. I mean, Wolverine's probably the top one just almost by default because he's so prominently featured, but I think everyone's like second favorite character was Gambit.
Yep. Yeah. So it's to get him as wrong as you did. I mean, look, maybe if like nobody cared, then maybe you could give him a D, but I don't know. You didn't do it right.
No, you as the president of the Gambit fan club, your ranking holds true. I'm going to defer to you on all opinions on this. So that's a firm F.
Thank you. Yeah, and I will say too, I'm always open to doing characters a little bit differently, but it has to still make sense. And it just felt like lazy. Look, honestly, kind of like the rest of the movie.
Okay. Let me see here. I am going to go with kind of on your heels here. I'm going to go with Nicholas Holt's Beast.
Oh, okay.
This is him here, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
I'm going to put him in the D category.
Okay.
Now, I love Kelsey Grammer. He may come up a little bit later. That's my preferred Beast in this.
That is actually Kelsey Grammer.
That is
sorry,
the Kelsey Grammer one. It's a small one here, but we'll figure that out in the meantime.
Yeah, continue with your point. I'll look while you're talking. Go ahead.
Nevertheless, the Nicholas Holt version is a little bit too like bitchy. Like he's like one of those guys who's like, I'm a nice guy, but really turns out to be mean and like kind of hateful. I'm not really here for that. It's not my take on Beast. Give me CGI Kelsey Grammer any day of the week.
Yeah, I can't say I loved him immensely either. I do think there's like something that can be done better with those early stages of Beast. Is he at the very bottom, Wes? I can't see the very bottom, but maybe he's down there. No, I don't know if I see him on
here. He might not be on here. Okay. No,
there you go. That might be why he's not on here. So in that case, do you want to, since he's not on here, do you want to
I'm going to bump him up to a B ahead of Psylocke, if that's the case, then.
For Kelsey Grammer's Beast.
For Kelsey Grammer's Beast. Yeah, we're going to make a little pivot there. Yep. And Nicholas Holt, you know, you can see honorable mention. We talk about him here a little bit, but he's in the D range. Just know that.
I'm excited to see what he does with Lex Luthor, but I do agree with the Kelsey Grammer B ranking. Honestly, like that's – I'm not the biggest Beast guy. I'm far from the biggest Beast guy, actually. I do think that you would put him at B. I think I could see someone arguing like that he's a lower end A too.
Yeah, and I'd be open to it. And I think it's how we're introduced to him, right? Because like my introduction to him was from the X-Men animated series where he's like – more of like a paternal figure. He's smart. He kind of knows everything. People go to him for information. This Nicholas Holt, and that's kind of like the problem with the first class characters, is you're seeing them figure everything out, and they're all young, and they're going to make mistakes. But he feels like he rarely makes a mistake as that elder statesman who's been in there for a while. So maybe it's more so just when we see these characters less than you know, their portrayal. Although I'm not a fan of Holt's emo style.
Yeah, he's got emo style out of
Well, he's kind of like sad boy. He's like, you know, he's kind of butthurt over, you know, losing out on Mystique there. And he's always like, and he's kind of like jealous with Xavier. And he kind of has like this weird love triangle thing going on with them. He's always the odd way out.
Yeah, he definitely is the odd one out. But anyways, I'm nitpicking here. Okay, so let's see. So we got Kelsey Grammer. Could you scroll down for me? So I
yes, yes, yes.
All right. All right. I am going to add to. I'm going to go into the B range here. We're going to go with the guy who got mentioned earlier, but you have not seen, in full, I guess, in action. That's Liev Schreiber's Sabretooth, who very comfortable putting him in the B range as opposed to where the other version of Sabretooth is. You could put him in the middle of the two. I don't he's on that tier either way for me, but, he's much more fleshed out character, obviously, in this version of it. There are some changes that are made to the character's fictional history, which, okay, whatever. But I think...
Is that them being like guns for hire throughout every war?
Oh, no. I
love that scene, actually.
That is some of that. But they were like the Weapon X team that they were on. Like that was their thing.
Gotcha.
But at the same time, like, I do think the portrayal of the character and not the backstory of the character, but how he's written throughout the movie, I do think that he's still very well done. And I do think Liev Schreiber could have continued to play that character and done a really good job with it. So I enjoyed his performance. I think when you look at that movie, as much as there are issues with his backstory and Logan's and everything, I do think like those are probably the two things that you look at and say, those are the strong points. And I'm not counting Ryan Reynolds as Wade Wilson because of how dirty they did that character.
Right.
But like, those are the two bright spots of that movie.
It's interesting. I think the first Sabretooth in X-Men, it looks the part from the comic books, right? He's got the look down, but I think from a casting perspective with Liev Schreiber, obviously, like you said, fleshing out the story a little bit more, having him play more of a role, but him in comparison to Hugh Jackman, they kind of look like brothers.
Yeah.
I can kind of see, especially from like this picture here. You know, I can kind of see the familiar resemblance in that. So I can buy that. That's good with me.
Yeah. For that decision that they made, it does make sense. Yes. But also with the other Sabretooth too, like he also had a ton of prosthetics and everything in there. So that's...
yeah, but they at least took the effort to try to make him comic accurate.
Yes. Yeah.
And that guy's not saying anything or doing anything anyway, right? He just says like, scream. Isn't that all he kind of says when he's choking Storm?
Yeah. He may have like a couple other lines, but yeah, you're pretty much right. So yeah.
Okay. I like this here. All right. My choice. I'm going to go in the A category and do Evan Peters' Quicksilver.
Okay.
Days of Future Past. Maybe behind Nightcrawler here. We'll put him. But, you know. Do I want to put. I might even put him ahead of Cable. He plays a bigger role.
I think he deserves to go ahead of those two because he's in multiple movies, because he also, like, he went toe-to-toe with the MCU's Quicksilver, and as much as he came and went really fast,
yeah,
that he very definitively won that conversation right off the rip.
Absolutely there. And much like Nightcrawler, actually, he's responsible for one of the better scenes in X-Men history there with that first slow-motion scene. The second one gets played out a little bit, but the first one is very cool. They did it in kind of a unique way, a quirky way to kind of match his frenetic, maybe ADHD type of personality. Evan Peters picks that up perfectly, kind of playing that like neurotic kid.
Yeah, take notes, Ezra Miller.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah, so that's he's probably the pinnacle of like the speed power in superhero movies that we've seen
to this point. Absolutely, there's no denying that. All right, I think it's a strong addition to the A category. All right, do we have? Okay, I'm gonna go back to the C category, and I'm gonna throw Emma Frost in there. So, yep, there you go, you got her. I do think that it's obviously this is January Jones, right?
Yeah.
So she obviously has like the look down for the character, and then some of the like the CGI that they have with her diamond skin and everything. Like they mm-hmm. do a great job with all of that. But I also just think that it is good that she's working for Shaw, because that is a role that she's been in a lot. But I also think that she's just dramatically underutilized. She is so much more powerful and capable of so much more than what we see with her in First Class. I don't think that that's a detractor on that movie, but I just do think she had more to bring to the table. So I could understand someone giving her a B. I don't think anything lower in the, I don't think a D though would make sense for her.
I have a distinct memory of her trying to seduce, I don't know if it's like a senator or a mayor, yep, or something. And, like, and he thinks that he's doing something, but it's all in his mind. He's just sitting there in the corner, like pretending to like motorboat it. And she's just like fixing her nails or something, you know?
Yeah.
That's a great scene. I like that.
It is a great scene. And stuff like that is where it's like, okay, maybe you could bring her into a B, but she just didn't get used enough in it.
Okay, here. So this kind of goes into what I was saying in our Beast, Nicholas Hoult, Kelsey Grammer argument. I wonder if I'm influenced more by the initial introduction of the X-Men, because it was first, but I was also younger, so it means more to me. I have more of a nostalgic feel to it. But I'm going to make our first nomination for the Unrivaled category, and that's Patrick Stewart's Professor Xavier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I liked what's his name? Why can't I think of his name there?
McAvoy,
the younger one. I liked McAvoy's performance, but this, again, when you talk about casting, this is exactly what I think of, albeit minus the yellow floating wheelchair, which we do get a little bit later in the MCU. But
yep,
this is exactly who I think of when I think of Professor X.
100%. This is very well used. I 100% would have put him in there as well. He's there are three in that I think go in here easily, and then the label of Unrivaled makes a fourth spot that's like up for grabs.
Okay,
I'm not sure.
All right, we'll see what that fourth one is there. I'm eager.
Just the nature of the Unrivaled, but I'm gonna go back to the A category, and this is a character who could, if she gets the opportunity to do more in the MCU, she could move into Unrivaled territory, and that's mm-hmm. X-23. And she is absolutely at the front of that A conversation. I don't know if there's going to be any, there won't be many higher than her in that A category. This kid did such a good, Daphne Keene, right?
Yep. Yeah.
He did such a good job in this role. And she, I mean, she's just a young kid. I forget how old she was, but it's, but it, what's perfect is she's now like with the X-Men coming into the MCU, she could now join the MCU as X-23 and be like on the end of this, because she's what, like 19 now, I think.
Is she? Yeah.
Or maybe in her early 20s, but that's kind of where X-23 has been mostly. I think she's now in her mid 20s. I think that's how I believe she is, but she's in that, she's like, you know, young adult range.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Where not YA, but like actual adult. But yeah, she's like, so she could come back and play that character. And I think she does a great job. Obviously that benefited in some ways, benefited from not having a ton of lines, but yes. Also yep. Had to do so much despite not having a ton of
there, there's the physical acting, the facial expressions, right? That comes across. You're conveying the emotion of, like, you know, her really relying on Logan and then developing, you know, some sort of like a child parental type of relationship with him. And you see that she really cares for him. I agree. I think this is an A. And I also agree. I think it's probably aided by her not having that many speaking lines. I think that kind of like saves her a little bit, maybe in the same way that Psylocke gets a B, because we're not overexposed to her so much.
Yeah, and also too, like part of the reason I call it into question of like how she'd do if she had more speaking roles. I mean, generally we talk about how like kid actors can really mm-hmm. negatively impact a movie, but the other thing is too that I'm not familiar with her work outside of this, so I have no.
I wasn't clue. Familiar with your game, right? The yeah. Shaq O'Neal.
Exactly. So. I don't know what she'll bring to the table, but I'll tell you, I hope that if she's willing, and I hope that they bring her back.
All right. I'm going to make this quick because we already mentioned this. This was an F for the first Deadpool in X3.
Yeah. That might be the worst one of them all.
Where they get rid of his mouth, you know, so that's a nice little callback, but that's just about it though.
I mean, that's the dumbest thing you can do is get rid of his friggin' mouth. I mean, that's why everybody loves. He's
the
Merc
with the mouth.
Yes, I mean that's like okay. It's like if you did it for 2 seconds, then it's funny. But you have it for the whole thing, and it's like, what do you mean? Like, mm-hmm. like you said, he's the Merc with the mouth. That's why people love him. So no, that was yes, 100%. Like he's, I don't know. I think he's going to be the bottom of the list, Wes. By the end of this.
Yeah. Yeah. You want him at the bottom or do you want to make sure that Gambit is at the bottom to send a message?
You know what? Your logic is fair, but I do think we have to stick with Wade Wilson there just because of what we've seen with him later on by the same fucking actor. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. All right. So, all right. You know what? We mentioned Halle Berry a little bit earlier. Let's bring her into this conversation. Her portrayal of Storm. I'm going to put that one at a B. I want her in front of Kelsey Grammer, though. I mean, unless you feel...
No, I'm good with it. I could be talked into an A. I think she's great in this. I feel like that's... Again, so maybe I'm biased because that's the first one that I saw, you know? But
I do think that that's a fair conversation to be had. And I honestly, Wes, if you feel strongly enough, because I feel like she's a fringe A, a very comfortable top end B.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you feel differently, I won't. You know, no stamps or anything or vetoes are taken.
Yeah. So. Depending how the board lays out, that might be in consideration to move up there. But I mean, we're in, you know, virtual agreement. Otherwise, I think she's great. She's what I think of when I think of Storm in the live action.
What happens to a toe when it gets struck by lightning? Same thing as everything else.
That's what a classic line.
Oh God. But I will say like that Storm does have like goofy like comments like that. We see it mm-hmm. in like the cartoon and everything. So it's just like where people are more familiar with her. So but that's a little extra goofy, but anyways.
All right. It looks like we only have one Cyclops on here.
Really?
And that's the James Marsden version, but maybe we can have this Cyclops conversation right yes. now, because once again, James Marsden, I think, is perfect casting for Cyclops. Scott Summers looks just like him. You know, it's the spitting image type of thing.
Yeah. Crazy.
And he gets done dirty in X3 there. You know, they kill him off like that, which is kind of bad. I'm not a huge fan of that, but again, great casting. I want to put him. I'm compelled to go A.
Wow.
But maybe I'll do B in front of Storm.
I think that's fair. I don't think on my grading scale he'd be ahead of Storm, but at the same time I can understand it, especially as you being a Cyclops guy.
But you know what though? I'm gonna put Storm in front, comfortably in the B, but then I would just contradict myself if I want to move her up to the A at the end.
Okay, gotcha.
And then leapfrog over Cyclops, right? That wouldn't really make sense. Yeah.
But if you feel like Cyclops is an A, I mean, then
he's borderline. I think the line to start with like an 89 is that Cyclops between Beast. You know what I mean? That's kind of where I'm thinking.
Yeah, I think I do think he does a good job. In terms of his in the way the character's written to, I think it's pretty good. I mean, I know people talk about how like he's just so like he's like you know, like kind of a petulant child. Like we've seen a lot of that with Cyclops over the years. Mm-hmm. And I understand how he's like, there are times where he's been written in the comics where he's been a good leader, like not just this whiny dude. But at the same time, I always felt like he was kind of whiny in the animated series. And that is where I was first introduced to him as a little kid. Mm-hmm. So I don't, you know.
Yeah, because everyone loves Wolverine and he has no patience for Wolverine. So he's always complaining about what Wolverine is doing or not doing or moving in on his girlfriend and stuff. So he does kind of have like a teacher's pet type of vibe to him, which I think people are naturally turned off to. I think that gets explored even more so with what's his name? Ty Sheridan. Thank you. With his portrayal of it in the next trilogy. And it also comes because it's like expounded even more because he's a child. He is a child acting like a child, you know.
He's terrible.
You see him getting dropped off, right? He's kind of like a yuppie. He's an upper middle class family. He's kind of got it all going on, despite his lack of vision. So yeah, and then of course you get the classic line of, "If you touch her, I'll fucking kill you," which is a great line. That's a standout line from. Is that Days of Future Past?
I honestly
yeah. What you know? What I mean?
Yeah, I know. I remember that line, but yeah, I know, but I don't.
Maybe yeah. It's Apocalypse.
So with Ty Sheridan's version, where do you?
That would probably be in the D range.
Yes, I agree. Yeah, he's not a full fledged F, although I can understand anybody arguing that, but I have him in the D category. All right. Could you just scroll down a smidge for me? All right. Do we have? Oh my God, we don't have the original Mystique in here, do we? We just have...
No, it looks like that is...
Wow!
Just... Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's so disappointing. What the fuck, man? Come on.
Yeah, that is disappointing. We thought this one was had all our bases covered. And for the most part, it does.
It does, yes. Peek behind the curtain, everybody. Wes found a good one, but there was stuff that was lacking there. Then I found a good one, but there was other stuff that was lacking there. Both important. Then we came together on this one because it had... The things that ours were lacking, it covered, but now we found out.
Now we're missing it here.
Yeah, so there was just no way we were going to get it 100% how we wanted to. So let's go with J-Law's Mystique then, because I want to talk about her a little bit. I'm going to put her in the – definitely not in the B category. I think I'll put her in the C category. At the right there, no. Put her at the end of the spectrum for me, because I was debating about putting her in the D category. So first of all, we talked about this recently, but I forget who played her originally. The actress
Rebecca Romaine Stamos. Yeah,
Romaine Stamos. Mm-hmm. She did an outstanding job as the character. Like, and I thought like whoever was the stunt person, I'm assuming it wasn't her, but all the acrobats with that character were outstanding. For some
those high leg kicks.
She was awesome. So the only flaw would be with her writing that she was like Magneto's right-hand woman. She's more than that, but at the same time, like it's really well done. A very comfortable B for me. And I do think she's in that, she could be in that fringe A category, but not more so than Storm or Cyclops for that writing issue.
Mm-hmm.
J-Law is a C, borderline D. A lot of it has to do with the writing. I do think that they put this character too much on center stage too. Mm-hmm. But just in general, to go and have her be like this somewhat hero type of individual, Mystique is a complicated, interesting character in the comics. No question. She definitely borders on evil a lot more. In this, I feel like they kind of are trying to make her do that, but then they go and keep trying to make her too heroic. You know, mm-hmm. Days of Future Past, she's part of the problem, obviously, and that's interesting. But later on, like in, what was it, Apocalypse, she's more heroic, and it's just like, oh, come on, man. Like, what do you, what, was it Apocalypse? Yeah, it was Apocalypse. She was more heroic.
Yeah, yeah. And that, by that point, I feel like she was so done with it. You know, that she just kind of had like a, almost like a Dakota Johnson mentality to Madam Web. You know, she was like, all right, you're paying me all this money. I'm here. We got to do this. I'm not really thrilled about being in 4 hours of makeup, but okay. Let me just get through these lines and get over it.
It's a tough, you know, character to play for that role. Reason alone.
For sure. For sure. You mentioned like storylines and tie into the comics and stuff. Did she have that like relationship with Xavier?
No.
So no. That was all just that, like from childhood, yeah, and taking her in and everything like that.
Not that I remember. No.
Mm. Yeah. So yeah, I mean, that definitely, you know, doesn't help its case either. I'm no. good with that. It's tough when the blob is ahead of you, you know?
Yeah. Exactly.
Okay. All right. Let's see here. I'm going to go with Colossus.
Okay.
From Deadpool. And he's in the B range here. I'm probably, you know, I'm not going to put him ahead of Sabretooth, but ahead of Psylocke there.
Okay.
You know, I love Colossus. We talked about it last week on the episode there. You know, he's kind of funny. The CGI is a little wonky, but that's, you know, it's tough to convey that type of character in a live action format there. So I'm a little forgiving on it, but he's got the moral code, which I'm a huge fan of. He is the X-Men, at least in the Deadpool movies. He is really the X-Man.
Yeah.
He's like the only one.
And I, as much as it's like, oh, can we get more X-Men characters in those movies? I kind of like that it's just him, because Colossus is someone who is perpetually overshadowed, because we do get him in the original movies. Mm-hmm. And that was one of my things that I like from X3, because we get to see him go off a little bit because he's one of the ones there fighting at the last stand. But I don't think we saw him on some of these lists, but not on this one for us.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I do. I think B is perfect for the one that we get in the Deadpool movies. So, all right, I am going to move over to Rogue, who's all the way on the left for you right now.
There we go. Anna Paquin's
Rogue. And she's going to go in. She's going in the D.
First D. Yeah.
Because I want someone in there. And believe me, that is someone who could absolutely be in the F category 100%. And I'm like, I kind of want to put her in there now that I'm saying this. This is tough. Yeah. What do you think? Well,
this is another character that's near and dear to. They really make her to be pretty frail in this. Maybe that's no pun intended with her. She's like indestructible, but you know, she's kind of like, what's the word?
I'm F.
Yeah. Okay.
Yep. You talked to me. Yeah. Because, okay. And here's why.
She's like helpless. She's like a little bird.
100%. That is exactly it. And I understand that you ran into issues from like licensing or whatever because of how fractured Marvel was at the time that Fox got the X-Men. Totally get it. And that it's a tough thing to work around. And maybe it's like, oh, we can't go and give her this strength because she pulls it from Danvers. You can't just give it to her off the rip. That's fine. I respect that. That's an obstacle for you. However, you could have had her steal it from somebody else who was super fucking strong. You could have found, or you could have still made her a badass, like lean into maybe her, you know, tougher history a little bit as opposed to just making her this weak and feeble thing. Like that was, so you totally like ruined a character who's totally awesome. Now, I wanted to put her in the D category just to get that category going, but no, she's an F, as you talked about it more. It's just not.
Okay. I'm good with that. I am good with that. We'll do another quick one here. We'll get this right out of the way. Also going in unrivaled, Deadpool. Oh, Ryan Reynolds. The Deadpool, not the X-Men one. And this is ahead of Sir Patrick Stewart because, again, plays a little bit of a larger role. He's the lead character of his own movies, getting his third trilogy. there's really not much to be said here. He's great.
100%. Yes. I would even say he might be, if we did another tier, he might be like a unrivaled, then like godlike or like MCU worthy. Like,
right. Yeah.
He
yeah.
might be like the step ahead of Stewart, but that's a conversation that actually might be an interesting one. If we ever did like the rankings, the top 10 rankings of like all superhero castings ever, or all Marvel. I don't think we've ever done that before.
No, not with castings. That could be interesting.
Yeah, because like those
two that down.
Might be in the conversation. Anyways, moving on down. I've been staying away from the Unrivaled one. You know what? We'll just do another quick one here. Go ahead and put one of Hugh Jackman's Wolverines. I know we have Old Man Logan, and I know we also have Wolverine in here. Like,
yeah,
but it's both.
That's the same character. Yeah,
it's unrivaled for both. There's no question, and he's up there for all time. Legitimately, the only knock on him as Wolverine, forget like how his movies did and everything like that. The only knock on Hugh Jackman as Wolverine is he's too tall. That's it.
Yeah,
the only thing.
No, and the guy gets juiced to the gills every time he signs on for another role to play for him, right? Crazy. So it's like, you know, the commitment's not there. He's putting pounds of HGH into his system just for this role. You know, some could say that he's made his entire career off this role. So
100%.
He is, again, when we talk about Robert Downey Jr., Chris Evans, all that, he is the pinnacle of that. So that second row that you were talking about adding, he's ahead of Deadpool on that, and it's maybe just them two.
I think in general, it's them two for this grouping. It's just Deadpool and Wolverine. Yes, I think though, if you're talking like all time, it's between him and RDJ. Probably goes to RDJ, but
yeah.
It's between
that's two. A tough one. That's a good conversation.
Yeah.
All right. I'm gonna go with a high C. Banshee.
Okay.
Banshee here. That's thought fair. Small role, very cool. You got the Irish red hair there, so you know you got the Irish lore behind it. Banshee, pretty cool power set, fun time. I didn't need a whole lot of them, but a good representation.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty fair grade. I think we're gonna have a comfortable amount of C. Actually, you know, I'll follow you and add a C. No, you know what? No, I know where I'm going to go here. But Banshee is a good call for the C category, because not like nothing overwhelming, but like solid. Okay, you got the job done. Definitely some changes from the character in the comics, but whatever. D category, because I'm determined to get somebody added there. Apocalypse is getting added in there.
Oh, see, this is where we might get the disagreement on here, but go on.
Okay, so I think that Oscar Isaac was put in a tough position. I do think that there's some issues with the way this movie's written. I do think that there's also issues in terms of, like, this probably needs to be two movies if you're going to do Age of Apocalypse, right? If you're doing an Apocalypse story correctly. But at the same time, like, I do think that in the end, his portrayal was just, like, It just fell short. It didn't feel as like all powerful.
See, it worked for me. I loved his presence and everything. I thought it worked. He's just maybe a little too small. Maybe you can fix that with camera angles. That's not a huge knock on it, but yeah, I think he's a little bit of like a victim of the film itself. Everything was kind of going downhill at that point. And, I might put him up a little higher. I like the portrayal. That might be like on the low B end for me.
Oh wow,
low B. I might move it up to the C range if I had to make a choice here.
Everybody talked about the short stuff, and so you're right to bring it up. But that was something that I don't know. I don't know. I just didn't feel like he was, I guess it could be mistaken for the short thing, but I just didn't feel like he was as in control as that. Like he didn't act, like there was something about that was missing, like that the character normally has.
Okay.
But that's just me, I guess.
All right. I thought he was pretty compelling, pretty scary. You do get that cool scene where it's him and Xavier in the mind, and that's when you see him get really big, like I've seen in the comics and the TV show. That's pretty cool. But All right, I may dwell on that. I don't hate it, but I also don't love it either.
Okay, well, you got some vetoes and stamps to use later, maybe.
Okay, so this is... I'm going to go with Sir Ian McKellen.
All right.
Magneto. Not my preferred Magneto.
Okay. I'm going to give you the floor.
But... you know, he did great. You know, he gets that old Magneto, which we have from the comic books and from the TV show and everything. But not my, you know, how much can he actually do, you know? And I guess that's cool because he doesn't really have to do anything. He just moves stuff with his mind. I'm going to put this right at that marker for the high B, low A.
Oh, my God. You're putting him at a B?
I liked, yeah. Is that too high? What do you think?
No, it's not too high. It's too low. I'm blown away.
No, because I think that Fassbender, and maybe you can choose him after. Maybe we can have this conversation. I think he's unrivaled.
I think that this is semantics, but getting like with it being unrivaled is like, well, you can't really have two guys play the same character and both be in here. So it's
but
really
I think
difficult.
He puts Ian McKellen. I hear you. But if we were to put him in A, then he definitely is rivaled. That's a good rivalry.
So it's, well, okay. I guess that's a fair point. There's just no rival whatsoever. I guess that is a fair way to look at it. But for me, they're both so fucking good.
I put them on that borderline, that 88-89
high
B range.
I'm not going to leave him there. We're going to put him in. You can move him into the A. I'm using a veto and I'm going to stamp him there.
Well, what if I stamp him there preemptively?
I already said it though.
Yeah, but it's still my move.
Licked it, stamped it up. Oh, okay. Okay. If you want to do that, then what's going to happen to Fassbender?
Cause it's like, I could stamp that as well.
You don't have Fassbender. Well,
if I were to put him in there. Yeah.
Yeah. How about this? Trade talk.
It's like chess moves, you know. Like until I pick my hand off the piece, it's still my move.
Let's do something the Red Sox can't hear. Let's have a conversation as two opposing teams in this one. All right, I'm gonna move Ian McKellen into the A range. I'm gonna move him right behind. I'm gonna move him at the top of that for where it is now, and I'm gonna stamp him there. I will then put Fassbender at unrivaled on this next move.
Yeah, but you probably would have had him as an A. I feel like I'm getting fleeced here. Can we?
Talk I would. I'm gonna put
first round picks. Pick swap maybe.
I'm gonna put him as an A if you don't. Because I can only have one of them be better than the other.
Trade declined. Stamped.
All right. Then put Fassbender at an A, ahead of Daphne Keene.
Where
I keep wanting
here?
To call her. He's at the top on the three from the right.
There no, that's Shaw.
Oh,
yeah, that's Shaw. No,
oh, wow. Oh, no. Yeah. Okay. Yep.
Where in the A?
Right there. It's at the very front. 100% at the very front. Because I love both of them. And the fact that we had to get it to that we're doing this actually crushes my soul because I think that they both did an outstanding job.
Well, I think if we're staying true within the guidelines of the tier here, it's clear that one of them is rivaled.
This is true. Also, I'm stamping Fassbender there too, just to, make sure
okay, yes,
shenanigans
yes,
later.
Yep.
So yeah, you know what? And this is actually, maybe this tends to happen where we disagree and then we actually find the correct
the middle.
Answer.
That's what
here.
Friendship's all about.
This makes sense because the fact that they are rivaled by one another because yes. Ian McKellen does such an outstanding job and the character is written very well in a lot of ways. And then you get the same thing with Fassbender, but at the same time, you can't go, you go and say that Fassbender is your Magneto. And I'm like, I do love him, but also like, I think of Ian McKellen first. So
I see. Okay. I see. Yeah. Yeah. I thought Fassbender just did such a good job the way that he was written. You get the backstory out there. So you kind of see that growth, you know, instead of just being told that he's, you know, hates humans and for what's happened to him, you actually see it. So you're more emotionally attached to it. So you can kind of understand where he's coming from there. Then that's like the moral villain, you know? So it's exactly who he is as a character. You know, through the comics, TV shows, all that kind of stuff. So mm-hmm. I'm in agree. He's my Magneto, but I'm happy that we at least agree that he, you know, he's one and McKellen's two.
That's yeah.
One A, one B, however you want to call it.
And I think that that's so for me, it's solely because that there's more writing surrounding that character's background. Whereas in McKellen, his version, he's just big bad and that's it. But I will say too, I do have one of Fassbender's. The helmet that I have is one of Fassbender's version.
Oh, okay. Oh, so that's eventually what he picks up, right? So that's his helmet, Shaw's helmet.
It was Shaw. I think it was Shaw's, but then he adds the like little thing at the front.
The tuning fork. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That thing. All right, your turn.
Let's see here.
An interesting negotiation.
Yeah.
I didn't see that happening.
I am going to go with right next to Colossus in the B range. Well, no, high C, Juggernaut.
Okay, and this is the Juggernaut from Deadpool.
From Deadpool, yes. Yeah, not the I'm the Juggernaut bitch.
Yeah, which I don't think he's on this one, if I'm not mistaken.
No, I didn't see him on here, okay. Which would fall in line because they haven't really duplicated too many of the side characters, just some of the main ones.
Mm.
But yeah, I think that's cool. Again, it's great to see him, you know, actually kind of CGI'd and as big as he should be. Pretty cool to see. I always liked the Juggernaut character.
Yeah, I think that this is I think like you debating between like low end B and mid, like a high C makes a lot of sense here.
And it's satisfying because the first introduction was so poor. So then yeah. Finally be like, oh, this is cool. Okay. And then it's such like a surprise. You think it's going to be him. You're not really sure. And then when he finally busts out of the cell, you're like, all right, this is awesome.
Yeah. And I could comfortably, like, I wouldn't blame, like, maybe, I don't know, maybe I'll move him to B later, but I like where he's at right now, just because you don't get so much, you don't get a whole hell of a lot of them. But when he's on screen, like he does do a good job. All right. You know, I'm going to stick with that movie. And I'm going to go with Domino, and I'm going to throw her in that B category. I know how you feel about the Kelsey Grammer Beast, so I won't put her ahead of that. But in my heart, she's ahead of that.
I'm fine with that. I think she was great in this movie. Not having too much background knowledge of Domino, I thought she played it well. It's too bad. I don't think she's going to be in the next one.
Yeah, that's too bad, but... Yeah, that's too bad. But she does a great job. Like, they do a great job playing with the character's powers and talking, like, and the whole running joke. It's like, this isn't actually a power.
Yeah.
And I felt with Domino, they I mean, she can be like a, like, she was introduced years ago as like this, like, more badass character. But in this instance, she's kind of a little bit more friendly, as much as she's still like a merc. I just thought that they made some changes with her. But they were like, they were smart ones. So this like, but at the same time, it still very much feels like Domino. So, and it made me read more like Domino centric stuff later on. So, well done. I like this one.
Yeah. And like you mentioned too, you know, you wonder how they're going to share or show her power set. And it's like, how are you going to make that really interesting and pop? And they did a really good job at it. So it makes you, makes you interested. It's like, all right. And it was a great use of it. So yeah, yep. I'm with you on there.
To the point where now I always, whenever I've done an X-Men draft since, or whenever I think about developing an X-Men team, it's like, how does Domino not cross your mind in some capacity? Because she's a very skilled mercenary and then she has luck on her side.
Yeah. She always works out. Yeah. I'm going to add to the D category, at the end, and Sophie Turner's Jean Grey.
I think that's fair. Yeah.
Maybe not necessarily her fault. I don't think the casting's bad, but again, she kind of came at the end of the road for the X-Men. So it didn't really work out like that. Mm. Yeah. The Dark Phoenix stuff, they should just never have even picked it up.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a pretty good call. I'm going to join you in the D category here with this one. Lady Deathstrike. This is a character who got turned into basically just, you know, what's the guy's name? What's his fucking name?
Stryker?
Stryker, thank you. She just gets turned into Stryker's thug, and that's it.
Like, mm-hmm.
Okay, like there's she has a hell of a lot more backstory. I know in the X-Men animated series they turned her into an ex-lover of Wolverine, which is not the case. She's Yuriko, not Mariko, who he has that relationship with. So that was, you know, whatever on that choice, but she still has a lot more. She's someone who's been around in Marvel. Like, she's done stuff with like Daredevil, I think, over the years too. So I think this is a character who had her being like this female evil version of Wolverine and her like powers manifesting in a different way is cool. And their fight was cool, especially for that time. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, she deserves more. She deserves more.
And when she got a great death. I'll give her that. You know, getting pumped to the gills with adamantium is a pretty good way to go out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she was. That was that all of that is like why I would consider putting her in the C category. But mm-hmm. she's just not bringing anything else to the table, and that's just the way that they wrote her.
Let's see. Sticking with Jean Grey, I'll go with Famke Janssen. I think that's how you pronounce her name.
Yeah.
Her version of it, and I'm gonna go.
They actually have. So I'm gonna stop you real quick there because they have Jean Grey and they have Phoenix on here. You're holding on to Phoenix right now.
Oh, where's Jean Grey?
She is a little bit like she's in the middle right now, under Pierce. On your
screen. Right. Oh, is that her?
Yes, that's her with the short hair. Yes.
Okay. Well, yeah. I'm gonna give her a low B.
Okay.
Put her at the end of the B there. It wasn't great, but I thought she did a good job.
Okay.
Better than Sophie Turner.
Yes, definitely better than Sophie Turner. I'm comfortable giving her.
Now, you know, we're gonna go in the high C range here.
I'm also comfortable with that. That's where I'm more comfortable, actually.
Yeah. Better than Sophie Turner, though.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, yeah, definitely better than Sophie Turner. All right. I'm gonna stick in that C range. Kitty Pryde. This is a character who I don't care a whole... I have not, generally over the years, cared a hell of a lot about her in the comics. I've just always been like, she's fine, whatever. And that's kind of why I have her here, because she's fine, whatever. But at the same time, like I've learned that this character has... in recent years, this character has a lot more to bring to the table. So C is fine.
And they changed her powers, right?
They changed her... powers.
I thought you mentioned that in last week's episode, that she was more like a telepath than whatever she really is. No?
No, her whole thing is the walking through walls. I mean, they make it where she's the one that sends Logan to the past in Days of Future Past, where she goes into the past, I think, in the comic. I can't remember. But anyways, no.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. I snipped it off somebody. I don't know who it was.
Let's see. Where do I want to go here? Days of Future Past Sentinel. That's going in the B. Thought that was a pretty cool representation there. I like that. Not traditional. It's not what you would think of maybe from the X-Men, the animated series. But I thought they were pretty intimidating, pretty formidable.
Yeah. Yes. I think that trying to go the clunky route is tough to do, more so than what they did, despite it taking so much probably in the CGI end. But it was pretty cool what they did here. I will give them that.
Yeah, that whole future scene was very, very cool.
Yeah. All right. Let's see here.
We're probably getting down to the end, you know?
Yeah. Do you want to start? Because I'm seeing the clock now where we're at. Do you want to start doubling up on picks?
Yeah, well, how many do you actually think you want to mention? I can see one, two.
There's quite a bit more.
Maybe three. Well, I know we have a lot more. We don't have to do.
Oh, this is true. That's true. All right. I'll go. All right. I don't know. We'll just go for a few more minutes, I guess. Okay. All right. I'm gonna add two to the C category here. We're gonna go with Shaw. And we're going to go with Bishop. Shaw is a super powerful character. I do think that I think you could put Shaw a little bit on the higher end of the C range. Because by and large, I do think he does some interesting stuff. And Bishop solely for just the amount of usage that he gets. He, like, the performance put forth, probably close to a B. I actually kind of feel, actually, no, put Bishop at the bottom end of the B, but he should be the bottom end of the B, like through and through, just because of how little he's used.
Yeah. Yeah. And I like the Shaw pick too, because he is really scary. I mean, when you talk about him with the young Magneto, at the concentration camps there. Just crazy, crazy stuff there. It's like a real evil villain type of mentality that he has.
Yeah. So it's he was over time I've appreciated that character more, especially seeing some of the stuff he's done in the Krakoa era in comics. But anyways, yeah. So go ahead and make a pair.
Okay. I'm gonna go with a D for Toad down at the bottom.
Yeah.
And Xavier, I want to put him at the B.
I think that's fair.
He's a little too pretentious, but you know, we see him, we don't see the polished end product of Professor X like we do with Patrick Stewart or in the TV shows or the comic books. So you, again, kind of like with Nicholas Holt's Beast, you're seeing the imperfections, you're seeing before the finished product. And that can be kind of trouble. You seem kind of be like a womanizer early on before he loses his legs when he's with what's her name, the agent there. You know, yeah, and then you know he's a little bit hard-headed and he's a little bit egotistical, which I feel like it's talked about in the show and in the comic books, but maybe they focus on it a little bit more on the movies than what I remember.
Yeah, I think B's fair, like because I remember people raving about it. Yeah, he's good. But he's not like people would rave about him, and I like he was great. And it's like he's good. I don't think he's like.
I gotta put him above the Sentinel, though.
Oh yeah, 100%. I think that's where you have him right now is pretty much where he belongs. I think those are both. Who was the other one that you went with?
Toad. Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Those both belong in the D category. All right. Go ahead and give me a little scroll down real quick here. Okay. All right. I'm gonna do. So I said that Bishop should be at the bottom of the B category, but I'm going to actually add someone there who's right in that same kind of spot as him. So all the way to the left in the second row, we have Blink right next to Sabretooth, where your cursor is. Blink. That's Iceman. Her. I'm putting her in that same conversation as Bishop, where she does a great job because that's that whole action sequence where she's got all the portals that she's throwing at everybody.
Yes. Yeah.
That's Blink. Mm-hmm. And obviously she's, you know, crucial in that whole fight. I think she does a great job. Same thing as Bishop, not utilized a whole hell of a lot, but went on camera, does an outstanding job. And then the other one that I'll add here actually will be, I'm going to go actually, no, you like Iceman a lot, right?
I do like Iceman.
I'm going to leave Iceman for you then. I'm going to go with his former buddy, Pyro, who it looks like we're getting back if for the MCU.
Yeah.
He's probably going to die. You can put him in the C category.
Yeah. Pyro is he's a little bit of like a punk. Mm-hmm. You're not a tough guy, but just like someone who's probably been hurt in his life, like hurt people. Mm-hmm. And he's just taking it out on everyone.
And that's fine. Like from comics and previous shows and stuff, mm-hmm. like it's fine, but just, yeah.
Okay. Let me see what I can do here. Oh, I just had somebody.
I said Iceman. So I don't know if,
I have him on the radar as well. Oh, you know who I was going to do? Darwin. Darwin's an F for me.
Okay.
purely because his whole powers that he adapts and he doesn't adapt.
Yep.
So that's kind of a tough look.
Yeah, no, that's a fair one.
kind of a stupid power set too. Like when mm-hmm. when you talk about like being able to convey a weird power set in Domino, like it doesn't really mm-hmm. do it for me here. Because the only thing that really sticks out to me is he gets like a turtle shell on his back or something like that when he gets into a fight. Like nothing else really jumps out at me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then Iceman, little bit of a lover boy, but weren't we all lover boys at a certain point in time?
Maybe we thought we were.
Yeah. I mean, not like a ladies man, but a lover boy. Like, yeah, pussy gets you trapped sometimes, you know?
Oh, okay.
That's my man Bobby here. Okay. But actually probably wrongly portrayed.
Well, later on it became the case. Yeah.
Cause he's a gay man.
Yes. I don't know if that was always the case in the writing, but I mean, I don't know.
Okay. I gotcha. But he does make a cool appearance back in Days of Future Past.
Mm-hmm.
So I liked him kind of popping back into there. I like the ice walls that they can make. That's a good time.
I just remembered how he's lamplighter now too in The Boys.
Oh yeah, that's right. That's right there. Yeah. Low end B. Better than a C, right?
This is why I didn't want to touch him, because I was like, you like Iceman, and I'm like, I Iceman is cool, but he doesn't, pardon the pun, but I've never been the biggest Iceman fan.
He doesn't do a whole lot, yeah.
So, but I was between a B and a C, so I was there with you. I didn't want to be the one that had to make that call.
Okay.
All right. Yeah, we're getting towards the end here.
One decent one hanging around.
Yeah, there are a couple that there's some that we have to address. But I'm going to continue to skirt some of those. And I'm going to add more to the C category, which is of course the favorite. We're going to go with Azazel, who is in your top right, mm-hmm. and then we're going to go with oh my God, why am I blanking on it? Thunderbird? Yeah, Thunderbird. No, that's... Oh my God, I keep mixing up Thunderbird and Lone Star. Shit, I can't do this because that's not fair.
Remember Will I Am?
No, I'm not. No. Bottom right on your screen right now. Hold up, because they're. Nope, that's Multiple Man. You know, Thunderbird. I was right.
This guy.
Yes, and you can go ahead and add him to the C category as well.
Poor image.
I was getting him mixed up with his
Warhawk
brother, who is Lone Star, right? Am I getting, Jesus, is bad. But yeah, I put him at the bottom of the sea. Again, another character who's he's a Native American X-Men character who doesn't get utilized a whole heck of a lot, similar to Bishop and to Blink, but in terms of his power set, kind of hard to do a lot with making him crazy cool. In such a short span. So that's the only reason that he's in, like, that's the kind of the separating line between him and those other two. Yeah. Okay. Go ahead. I'm like pissed right now.
All right. Last ones here.
Warpath. Fuck. That's what it was.
Isn't that what I said?
Did you say Warpath?
I think I did. Yeah.
Thunderbird is the brother who died, and Warpath is the one who we're seeing there. Jesus.
All right, we got Storm from Apocalypse and Dark Phoenix, right? Yep. She's fine, I guess. She's fine. Higher end of the C range for me. She's not, what's her name? I'm blanking on names here.
Halle Berry.
I'm losing steam. She's not Halle Berry. But this, she's fine.
I think this is the right grade. It's tough. Like, this is a tough time for Storm, like the character's history too, so... like she's just not. It's not. It's interesting with the, like, but we're not seeing Shadow King stuff, so you're changing it around. So, anyways,
yeah. All right, last one here, Nick, for you.
Oh, I thought you were going with. I'm sorry. When you said Dark Phoenix, I thought you were doing Dark Phoenix there. Oh shit. Okay. In that case, I guess we gotta go. We have to do Dark Phoenix. And I'm gonna put her in the. I'm going to put her in the F category because this character is so goddamn powerful and it can cause so much damage. And it is between her and the Deadpool, the wrong Deadpool, because she's deserved. Like, they treat her like this unhinged character that doesn't know what's going on. And yes, while Jean is like trying to war with this character, and she in the comics and in the cartoon, like she's out of control. At the same time here, it's like, you got the unhinged kind of wrong. It's not unhinged out of control. It's just like unhinged, like she's an unstoppable force and she thinks she's right and she's going to do, like, she's going to take over everything. So
she can't kill Cyclops.
What do you mean?
She can't kill Cyclops. You can't do that.
Oh, okay. Okay. I get what you mean now. Okay. Sure. I'll play your game. Last one for you.
Anyone? Okay, yeah. My last one, the original Angel from X-Men The Last Stand.
Okay.
I'm going to give him a C.
Yeah, I'm fine with that.
Yeah, Ben something. I forget what the actor's name is, but I liked him better than the other Archangel. Although, better action scenes with the Archangel there and the younger one.
It is crazy how many characters we still didn't even get to talk about in all this. I mean, I'm just looking quick at it now. We have Silver Samurai. We have Negasonic Teenage Warhead. We have the other Sabretooth. We have Pierce from the we have Francis. Ajax, everybody's favorite. And that's just a few. There's plenty more. Multiple Man. It's kind of I don't care much for in general. But
what movie was he from?
The Last Stand.
Oh, I don't remember him from that.
Yeah, but as we there's others that we have here and others that we haven't talked about that are not on this list that should be. So,
and who's Will I Am's character?
I don't remember his name.
Yeah, what did he do? Do you remember what his power was?
He was basically Nightcrawler.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, there's we have Arclight who gets mentioned in here. We have Moira McTaggart in here.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's others. It's just
Young Striker.
Yep, Young Striker. Is that Firefly? Is that blanking on that?
Yeah.
So, but there's a lot here. But we're like you said, I couldn't remember fucking Warpath. I think it was Thunderbird. So
yeah, we're running out of steam here, you know. So we got a lot of names. We got 3, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21.
We got a lot. We probably got
like 30 names out there.
Yeah, close to 40 probably. And honestly, I'm really comfortable with it. I know we had a couple extra stamps and vetoes, but
do you want to move anything around here that before we finalize it?
So I've used one of my stamps, of course, on Fassbender. You used yours on Magneto. McKellen, excuse me. I don't think I want to use a veto. I feel pretty comfortable with what everything else you did and everything else I did. So I think I'm good unless you move anybody or anything like that. I don't want moved down at least.
I'm going to move Apocalypse to the end of the sea.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I'm fine with allowing that. I'm not going to
say anything. Yeah. I was thinking, I was like, maybe I move the Sentinels down to the sea too. No, but I like having the Sentinel in the B range. That shows.
Yeah. I think that's fair.
Yeah, that shows good integrity, I think.
And I like how this worked out. We have only three A's, only a couple extra.
Should be four.
Three unrivaled. It should be four. That's where the battle was. Mm-hmm. Then we have a handful of A's. You started it. And then the B and the C are pretty crowded, but there's a little more C, and then we got a decent amount of D and F. So yeah, this worked out. I'm very pleased with this, actually.
Yeah, a lot of middle. Yeah, this is a pretty well balanced one. Okay, so that's...
Make sure you get a screenshot of this. I want to see what the rest of the group says at least.
Oh yeah, let me see if I can. I'll do that at the end. Yeah. But let's see. Where's the rest of the script here? We get the tickets to the Discharge Depot coming up right now. All aboard! Choo choo, bitches. All right, Nick, what'd you do this weekend? What'd you watch?
We watched, I didn't jot, this is the thing that came to me in the course of our conversation earlier, the Octopus Killings documentary on Netflix. Have you watched that yet?
Oh, I've heard about this. Is this like government stuff? Yep. Yeah. I've heard, I haven't watched it yet. Is it any good?
I thought it was really well done. And I'm watching it. I was like, oh my God, this is crazy. Like, oh my God. And then it starts to like unravel as things go along. It's like, yeah, I mean, I can see some things, but now everything looks kind of like the only thing that I look at now and say from it is there was definitely something weird going on. And it all started based off like a reporter, I think in 91 or 92 who died. And it was like, supposedly it was ruled a suicide, but then like very much questioned for so many reasons afterwards. I don't think that it was a suicide based on everything that we've like kind of learned.
Oh yeah. Yeah. This is like what they talk about with Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton, the Clinton body count, all these people die around them. Some of them are maybe employees and they end up with being committing suicide, but with like a gunshot wound to the, like two gunshot wounds to the chest or something. It's like, ah, oh, how is that possible? But it still gets labeled a suicide.
Okay. That's not this, but I think I've heard I've heard that mentioned before, but yes, this is a little bit different. But yeah, this, I thought it was the whole concept of it is the process of learning everything as these guys are trying to dig into all this information was fascinating. I think there is something to it, but it's just, there's too many people who are like supposedly key players in it that are unreliable. And it was very well done. Four episodes. I think it's like an hour pop each one. I think you'll enjoy watching that.
And yeah, I should give that a watch.
I finished the second season of Lauren and I did of Wheel of Time, which was a show that this is a show on Prime. I kind of liked it after the first season. I thought it was solid. Definitely was coming back for the second season. Lauren liked it a little bit more than I did. I just thought like there were certain things that I'm just gonna leave it at like I probably would have given it like a high C for the first season. Second season, fucking outstanding. We watched that first episode, and I was like, this is the best episode of the show by far. And I said that every single time till the end of that season. They did an outstanding job. So if you've not watched Wheel of Time, but you're like, oh, it's, you know, high fantasy, I like that. Watch the second season, and as long as you're like, the first season, and as long as you're like, this is solid, you'll absolutely love the second season. It was so good.
All right. High C for the high fantasy.
And then into an
season
A.
One into an A, yeah.
Yes. Oh yeah. Second right. season was, and you. I feel like it doesn't always happen a ton.
No. You usually wouldn't get the opportunity. I feel like.
Yeah. No. But there's so much potential in that book. There's like 14 volumes of that book. So there's probably such a massive fan base. But yeah, it's and I'm like, I for me it was just like there was just. There's a lot of world building in that first season, and I got confused. Like that was my biggest problem.
Gotcha.
In all of it, but anyways, that is it for me. What do you got?
I delved into the A24 universe. I didn't realize that Ex Machina was an A24 movie. Didn't realize how many movies, like how long they've been a studio for, and like how many older movies they had put out. But anyway, right, never seen Ex Machina in its entirety. Really enjoyed that. Oscar Isaac. Much better performance in this than in Apocalypse. So really good stuff from there. And the other one, this is what I was mentioning earlier, called Under the Silver Lake. This was starring Andrew Garfield. I think it came out in 2019. Maybe wrong, but fairly recent movie. And it's about this like surreal conspiracy mystery where this guy is like literally like Charlie Kelly and It's Always Sunny with like drawing strings and pointing to everything, kind of going crazy because this, you know, he's searching for a missing girl and he finds out that everything that he's searching for that he's been told is true and nothing changes. So it's like we were talking about with the conspiracy stuff. It's like,
oh, wow.
What do you do at the end of after finding out this information and literally nothing changes? So it was a pretty interesting movie, but it was weird.
So him finding that out, that's the start of the movie?
No, not really. But
that's the end of the movie.
Okay.
I'm just curious.
Okay.
I was like, oh, this is interesting. It's like I was like, oh, okay, now I know. So
yeah, Under the Silver Lake. Both those movies, all of A24 movies are on HBO Max right now if you want to check that out. So
oh nice. Okay. Yeah, I remember watching Ex Machina a couple years ago. Because I had never seen it either. It was because it's Domhnall Gleeson in that too, who plays General Hux. He does a good job.
He's the other guy. Yeah. That was a really good movie. Pretty crazy movie too, by the way. Pretty crazy to think about. But so that's that. And then next week, what do we have next week, Nick?
We're definitely doing another X-Men thing. We're going all out with X-Men this month.
Yes.
I think it was something to do with like it was a original. That's what it was. Oh boy. This is our massive undertaking.
Do we want to do the trilogy sets or do we want to do X2 versus Days of Future Past?
I think
that's probably the best two out of those stories.
I think that's probably the way we got
it. As a matter of fact, that might be the best way to go. With the kid's birthday this weekend.
Oh God, yeah,
that might be easier to have an undertaking.
Have to. Yeah, and we can label it as an original versus sequel. But for everybody listening now and
yeah, you get it.
We'll let them know. Like, no, this is more so like a what's a better which was the best representation of X-Men in the Fox era?
Sequel versus reboot.
Yes.
No, it doesn't have the same ring to it, but yeah.
We can do original versus reboot.
Yeah.
No, you know, if people are wondering what the fuck does that mean, they'll hopefully listen.
They'll figure it out. Yeah, we got it. But nevertheless, Nick, we'll be back at the same bat time, same bat place.